to get a chance to sit together. And today, a couple different threads, we'll see how they all come together. But as some of you may have been following some of the George Floyd trial, I didn't watch much of it, but I saw looked at some of it last night and saw a headline this morning that 4 more people have been shot in Southern Cal and 5 people were killed in Baltimore 2 days ago, and on it goes. And the sense of, as sort of continuing on from last week, of how do we hold all this? And the sense of what's our role? How do we show up for our fellow humans in this time? And how do we show up for ourselves where our hearts can be so easily broken or feel so heavy in response, again, to events that are happening out in the world? But again, we're still in the pandemic time and the sense of isolation and loneliness that so many folks are living with, or the sense of like, oh my God, we're still living with the same people 24/7. For 13 months, and the toll that that takes on even the best of relationships. And how do we tend to our own heart and our bodies that maybe not feeling well, or just the fatigue, right? It's still going on, and there's some hope with things opening up, and then what violence may come as things open up. So it's a very complicated time, and wanting to talk today and hopefully to have some conversation at the latter part about, again, how do we tend to the heart to stay open and not be overwhelmed by events of the world or our own circumstances, which is not easy to do. It's been a really challenging run of a time, to be sure. Those of you who know me know I love the podcast, Krista Tippett's On Being podcast, and she had an interview with Michael Longley, Irish poet, who spoke of the sort of finding beauty in the ordinariness of life in the time specifically of the Irish Troubles, about 30 years of basically civil war there. And when I was a kid in the 80s, I rode my bike around Great Britain. My mother's British and my father's part Irish, and was in Ireland for about a month on my bike and went up to Belfast, though I did not tell my parents. I went to Northern Ireland, and just listening to the poet speak about the time and the troubles. And when I was there, it was with a friend and we didn't know where we were and had crossed over from one part of town into another. And a group of teens made it clear by throwing stones and bricks at us that we shouldn't have been there. And the following day came up, was walking around, and someone had just been shot in this that was the time, and the time that we live in here in the States, that we can watch people being shot or Neil being killed by a knee to the neck in real time. And again, what do we do with this? How do we move in a world where life is so precious and can be taken so quickly? And again, the heart's response to the violence. In this conversation, it's really sweet between the poet and Krista Tippett talking about the power of poetry as a means of, poetry can celebrate the ordinary. Mary Oliver's poems on just the nature of the world. Krista Tippett writes that the way that your poetry speaks indirectly and very directly with beauty and normalcy, with the ordinary things, with the liveliness of ordinary things, to also what is hardest and most broken. The poet speaks longly. It's very complicated. I don't altogether like the idea that art can be solace. I dislike the idea that what's happened, the civic commotion, might be good for art. I dislike that. What does poetry do? In a way, he says it's useless. Poetry does nothing. And yet, art can tune you up. And I think of an out of tune violin and tuning it up so that it is in tune. This is what art is. This is what art does. And good art, good poems, is making people more human, making them more intelligent, making them more sensitive and emotionally pure than they might otherwise be. Poetry and the arts keep our imagination alive. They keep us connected to beauty and how essential that is in these times. One of his poems, I'll share all of these people. Who was it who suggested that the opposite of war is not so much peace as civilization? He knew our assassinated Catholic greengrocer who died at Christmas in the arms of our Methodist minister, and our ice cream man whose continuing requiem is the 21 flavors children have by heart. Our cobbler mends shoes for everybody. Our butcher blends into his best sausage, leeks, garlic, honey. Our corner shop sells everything from bread to kindling. Who can bring peace to people who are not civilized? Of all of these people dead, all of these people dead or alive are civilized. And again, the ordinariness, the butcher, the cobbler, the ice cream person. How do we live in a civil society, and what does that even mean? Here in the States, we have devolved, I think, out of civility. And but what? How do we cultivate within our own selves through this practice, which says so strongly, one of the deepest pillars of the bridge of this practice is a sense of integrity, sila, an ability to move in the world from kindness, from honesty, again, integrity, morals, ethics, whatever words we want to put to it, but it is a vital part of this practice and of most religions, but of how to be human. How do we show up for one another? Tolan and I were speaking earlier before class. We both had done this very short hour-long training with an organization called Hollaback about standing up as bystanders, really. And this was particularly focused on as bystanders to violence against Asian Americans. But how do we show up for one another, for our fellow humans who are being harmed? The different steps that we can take as bystanders to document. And I think in one of the people speaking in the Rodney King trial, speaking as an African American, if you are exchanging something in exchange with a police officer, you're going to document, you're going to get your camera out. And part of the training was like, document, document, document. But how do we do this? One of my favorite books, and we've heard this, Just Mercy, Bryan Stevenson's, is a lawyer who's worked doing profoundly powerful work with, among many things, but one of the areas in which he works is with trying to help wrongly accused and incarcerated, generally African-American men who are on death row, and to free them. And sorry about the dogs. In this book, he's just finished a trial in which a man who was wrongly on death row was freed. And he has this exchange with a woman who was in the courtroom. He writes, I recognized her as someone who had been in the courtroom when Mr. Carter was resentenced. In fact, I thought I'd seen her each time I'd come to the courtroom. When I walked over to her, she smiled. I'm tired and I'm not going to get up. So you're just going to have to lean over for me to give you a hug. I smiled back. Yes, ma'am. I love hugs. Thank you. Sit. I want to talk to you. I've seen you several times here. Are you related to Mr. Caston or Mr. Carter? No. I'm not related to nobody here, not that I know of anyway. She smiled. I just come here to help people. This place is full of pain, so people need plenty of help around here. Well, that's kind of you. No, it's what I'm supposed to do, so I do it. My 16-year-old grandson was murdered 15 years ago, and I love that boy more than life itself. Wasn't expecting this, and was instantly sober. I grieved and grieved, and I asked the Lord why he let someone take my child like that. He was killed by some other boys. It didn't make any sense. And those boys were found guilty for killing my grandson, and the judge sent them away to prison forever. I thought it would make me feel better, but it made me feel worse. I just cried and cried the day in the courtroom, and a lady came over to me and gave me a hug and let me lean on her. She asked me if the boys who got sentenced were my children. I said, no. I told her the boy they killed was my child. She sat with me for 2 hours. Well, for well over an hour, we didn't neither one of us say a word. I don't know if you can hear all this commotion. It finally felt good to have someone to lean on in the trial. And I've never forgotten that woman. Sorry about your grandson. Well, you never fully recover, but you carry on. I didn't know what to do with myself after that trial. So about a year later, I started coming down here. I don't really know why. I guess I felt like maybe I could help someone. Going down again, I apologize for the commotion. When I first came, I'd look for people who had lost someone to murder or another violent crime. And then it got to the point where some of the ones grieving the most were the ones whose children or parents were on trial. So I started letting anybody lean on me who needed it. All these young children being sent to prison forever, all this grief and violence, and those judges throwing people away like they're not even human. People shooting each other, hurting each other like they don't care. I decided that I was supposed to be here and to catch some of those stones people cast at each other. I chuckled when she said that. During the McMillan hearings, a local minister had invited me to come speak. At the church meeting, I spoke mostly about Walter's case, but I was also reminding people that when the woman accused of adultery was brought to Jesus, he told the accusers who wanted to stone her to death, "Let he who is without sin cast the first stone." The women's accusers retreated and Jesus forgave her and urged her to sin no more. But today our self-righteousness, our fear and our anger have caused even the Christians to hurl stones at people who fall down, even when we know we should forgive or show compassion. I told the congregation that we simply can't watch that happen. I told them we have to be stone catchers. I heard you in the courtroom today. I've even seen you here a couple of times. I know you're a stone catcher too. He says to her, "Yeah, well, I try." So how do we show up in the world to be stone catchers, to be able to be supportive, righteous bystanders to our brethren on this earth who are being harmed? How do we hold on also to a sense of beauty so we can stay nurtured and have the strength to show up, to look at, to train our eye to look for the beautiful? From Marilyn Nelson, "Listen," the bird feeder. The poem is called Bird Feeder. Approaching 70, she learns to live at last. She realizes she has not accomplished half of what she struggled for, that she surrendered too many battles and seldom celebrated those she won. Approaching 70, she learns to live without ambition, a calm lake face, not a train bound for success or glory. For the first time, she relaxes her hands on the controls, leans back to watch the coming end, asked. She'd tell you her life is made out of things she didn't do as much as the things she did. Did she sing a love song? Approaching 70, she learns to live without wanting much more than the light in the catbird window seat where watching the voracious fist-sized tweets, she hums along. How do we live? How do we allow ourselves to be touched by that which is beautiful? How do we allow ourselves to take care of our fellow humans? From Naomi Shihab Nye's shoulders, a man crosses the street in rain, steps gently, looking two times north and south because his son is asleep on his shoulder. No car must splash him, no car drive too near his shadow. This man carries the world's most sensitive cargo, but he's not marked. Nowhere does his jacket say fragile. Handle with care. His ears fill up with breathing. He hears the hum of a boy's dream deep inside him. We're not going to be able to live in this world if we're not willing to do what he's doing with one another. The road will only be wide and the rain will never stop falling. How do we hold each other as precious cargo in this world? But first, how do we hold ourselves that way? So many of us grow up with some timber, some quality of self-loathing. We're not good enough. We're not smart enough. We're not pretty enough. We're not rich enough. We're not blah, 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 and on and on. The ways in which we just can eat away at our own goodness, that we allow our souls to be harmed continuously through the ways in which we relate and talk to ourselves. How do we become stone catchers first? For ourselves to say, enough. There's enough harm and violence in the world? Can we put aside any ways in which we visit that upon ourselves? To live with a sense of gentleness and loving kindness, compassion, equanimity, enjoy these divine abodes that the Buddha said, come, rest your heart in these qualities, such that we can cultivate a sense of loving kindness, joy, compassion, equanimity with our own, within our own form, so we can move out in the world grounded by those same qualities. I'm going to ask you to, well, one more, read one more. From Michael Blumenthal, What I Believe. I believe there is no justice but that cotton grass and bunch berry grow on the mountain. I believe that a scorpion sting will kill a man, but that his wife will remarry. I believe that the older we get, the weaker the body, but the stronger the soul. I believe that if you roll over at night in an empty bed, the air consoles you. I believe no one is spared the darkness and no one gets all of it. I believe we all drown eventually in a sea of our own making, but the land belongs to someone else. I believe in destiny and I believe in free will. I believe that when all the clocks break, time goes on without them. And I believe that whatever pulls us under will do so gently, so as not to disturb anyone, so as not to interfere with what we believe in. Let's go, close your eyes. What do you believe in this world that is so brutal and violent and so beautiful and kind? What do you believe in? What do you believe in? We can look out and see the blue sky and flowers here that are blooming. What do you believe in when you see the headlines in the news at night? What do you believe in that allows you to navigate the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows that arise every day? What do you believe in that keeps your heart alive and strong? Let's notice what comes up. What do I believe in? The Pali word for faith is resting, sadha, resting the heart upon. It's the same question. What do we rest the heart upon so we can stay buoyant, stay afloat in these times that are not the darkest times? Certainly. There's a book, I'm forgetting the name of something like the Angels of Our Better Natures, that points to how much more civilized we are now. We are so much more kind than we were 500, 1,000 years ago. So it's better, but we've got some distance and some ground to cover. That moral arc that bends towards justice seems to be far out there. So what do we believe in? What brings us joy? Can we find joy and delight in the ordinariness of things? The ice cream, the equivalent of the cobbler shop, the equivalent of the butcher. How can we look around each day to notice and take in what is beautiful? Actually, as a question, what is, if you close your eyes, what is beautiful around you? Noticing if people's faces come to mind, if it's flowers, if it's the natural world in some way. What is beautiful around you? To think perhaps of beautiful places that you have visited, literally or in your mind's eye, through books or movies or travel. What do you believe in? What is beautiful? What brings you joy? Buddhist teachings and mudita, the Pali word for sympathetic joy, the joy and the delight of others. The Dalai Lama said, with 8 billion people on this planet, if we allow ourselves to be touched by the joys of others, that's pretty good. A lot of ways to have our hearts be gladdened. What brings us joy? What good fortune can we call to mind of others that can gladden the heart? To let these questions kind of hang and repeat. What do I believe in? What is beautiful? What brings me joy? These are essential questions for these times. To have our medicine basket, if it were, be full of these things to reach into as salves, as balms, as nurturance. Ah, this is what's beautiful. This brings me joy. This is what I believe in. So thanks for coming with me on that. And thank you for your kind attention. And I'd love to open it up to hear your comments or questions, thoughts. And so
thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.